Okay, Shalom Aleichem Rabbeisai, Agud Devach. We are in Cheves Halvavis Shah Avodas Elokim, Perek Hey. Where in my Leif Tov edition, it's page Reish Mem Aleph. If someone can just help us locate the English version. Again, it's Shah Avodas Elokim, in the middle of a long paragraph that says Omar HaSeichel, Ha'inyanim Sheim Toivim, and it's in the middle of that paragraph. It's Umimashu Toiv Mimeno Oid. Is there anybody who sees that in the English and can just unmute for a moment to tell us where it is?
Which one? 1 second. Umima, is that what we're looking for?
Yes.
300 in the Feldheim. 300.
Page 300. Yashar Koyach, thank you. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Let's bring ourselves back up to date with what we were in the middle of. Sorry. The Chavis Halvavis, basically, as we've been discussing, you can kind of call it a little bit of a step out. It worked in context, but it was kind of like a step out and kind of like recapping what he's aiming for in this Sefer in general. And he's basically giving us a portrait. We've been working on this for the last 2 weeks, a portrait of the person who is really living with everything he's been teaching, who's living with that keen awareness of Hashem and of Hashem's involvement in his life. And basically what we're discussing is a person who is obsessed with Hashem. That's basically what he's describing here. A person who is in love with Hashem, passionate about Hashem, in awe of Hashem, and all of the different dynamics that that involves, which covers the full spectrum from awe and even fear to intense joy and enthusiasm all together. Not as a contradiction, because that is what will naturally be when you are being drawn very, very close by someone very mighty, very influential, and who is taking a very personal interest in you. Okay. So we're going to continue. We're going to move on now. Umima shu toiv mimenu oid. Some more symptoms that would be appropriate for a person who's really living with this realization is leharis simanei ha'avoda v'amikana olav b'kol tnuas avav uv'midoisav, that everything about him demonstrates his relationship with Hashem. Meaning, again, this is a person who doesn't have a life and is also a religious Jew. Is not a person who has a life and also keeps Torah mitzvahs, but this is a person who lives his life with Hashem, whose life is dedicated to Hashem, and not in a form of like pious sacrifice, but rather, as we've been saying, obsessed with Hashem, in love with Hashem, and passionately involved with Hashem. So therefore, this is something he's very proud of, and you're going to see it manifest in everything he does, in all of his, well, we'll see everything about him. So let's see. So now, again, what we're going to be describing here is picture perfect, and this is not Musar. This is not admonishment. It's also not instruction in the sense of this is really what you should be looking like this afternoon. What it is, and this is something important to realize whenever learning Sfarim like these, he wants us to have a picture of the ultimate. Because when our sights are high, when our sights are broad, we will grow higher. will become greater. So let's hear this. Let's not, on the one hand, let's not roll our eyes because there were people who lived this way. And the other, on the other hand, let's not get dejected. Because again, we want to be operating in this system. We'll find, each person has to find his place in this system. And we're talking about a description of one of the greats of 1,000 years ago. It's big, it's overwhelming. But we want this to be our frame of reference. So let's see. Layege ki'im bezichroi. All a person is thinking about is Hashem. What that means is that Hashem fills his mind to such an extent that when even when there are other things going on, it's in the perspective of Hashem. This is basically what David HaMelech said, right? Shivisi Hashem lenegidi tamid. I picture Hashem in front of me all the time. Whatever I'm doing with the awareness of being in his company. We've given the mashal to that other times. We're just not going to go into the whole mashal now, but briefly, of the chassan and kala going for you know, one of those like technical dates. When they're meeting, it's like 3 weeks before the chasana. They're not going to a park. They're going for an intense day of taking care of things together. They're going to be going to stores. They're going to be going to the apartment. They're going to be taking care of things together. So the date essentially is not like, it's not like, you know, when you have a date that you go out for lunch together, you go to a park together, and you're just focused on each other. This is a more technical date. They're busy taking care of things together. Nevertheless, while they're taking care of things, 80% of their consciousness is still the other person. And the way he's going to talk to a salesperson when he's in the store is going to be a lot more focused on the impression that he's making on her while he's talking than on the salesperson. We've given this mashal in the past. But this is what he's talking about here. A person who's living his life with Hashem to an extent that whatever he's doing with Hashem occupying the forefront of his consciousness. And all he does is look at Hashem's ways. What does this mean? What this means is as follows. If you have it's wrong to use this term in this context, but this is pretty much the English word, someone who you idolize, a hero. You'll find yourself mimicking him. This could sometimes, you'll see this more in kids, but it could sometimes reach mamish ridiculous extents. When I was a kid, there was a basketball player who had a certain mannerism. And something he used to do with his face when he would shoot the ball. And this guy was everybody's star. And you saw kids, when they were playing, they would do the same thing with their face. They would make the same kind of face. Or, right, when playing baseball. Okay, I'm giving boys examples, but you can probably relate and apply it as relevant. When playing baseball, the professional baseball players used to wave the bat. When they held the bat waiting for the pitcher to pitch the ball, they would wave the bat back and forth. Now, when I was in fourth grade and fifth grade, when kids stood up to bat, they would wave the bat back and forth. You ask a kid, well, how does it help? What does it do? You know, it didn't make you hit the ball any easier. No one in the class could explain why the baseball players did it. No one could explain that. But Lamaisa, their stars waved the bat back and forth. They also waved the bat back and forth. They had nothing to do with the game. When you are in absolute awe and admiration of a person. Again, I'm trying to avoid the word you used before, even though that's really the word, at least in English. It's going to affect you in more ways than just, I admire the way this person does X, I'm going to try to do X in the same way. If it's technical, it's like that. But when you're a fan, when you're really obsessed with the person, it extends to a lot more than the particular thing that you admire about him. And certainly, Lahavdil, 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 when we're talking about Hashem, if we live a life of being in love with him, then anything about him is something that we want to associate with. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example just to bring the point home a little bit more. There is a halacha that when you dress, say putting on a shirt, put on the right sleeve first. Put on shoes, put on the right shoe first. You tie the left shoe first. That's not my point right now. In general, we give the right precedence. When you're taking a shower, you're supposed to soap and wash your right arm before your left arm and your right leg before your left leg. When you're doing these types of things, you attribute prestige to the right side. When you undress, you're supposed to take off the left side and only afterwards the right side. The right side comes off last. What's the idea? The idea is that we find examples in the Torah where the right comes first. Okay, so what? What exactly? It kind of sounds like very symbolic and technical. Why should we, because you find certain examples in the Torah where the Torah gives the right, puts the right first, the shechita and other such things by a kain, and the avodah should be done with the right hand, etc. Why does that mean that I have to put on my right sleeve first? The Torah doesn't say anything about putting on the right sleeve first. But the idea is, this is something that gives it so much more profundity. The idea is that, again, if we are, so to speak, obsessed with Hashem, and we know that Hashem is expressing himself to us through the Torah, if we find that Hashem considers right more important for whatever purpose it is. Now, by the way, we're not talking halacha l'maaseh now. If you're a lefty, you might have to switch things around because your left arm hand might be considered the right hand for certain purposes. Let's set that aside right now. We're not talking halacha right now. But if we find that Hashem considers the right more important, we latch onto that. And we want to show how into Hashem we are, that now, wherever we can, we are going to give the right precedence. We're going to give the right priority. We're going to attribute that prestige to the right side. So this is really what it is an example of, we're demonstrating through these halachas, through this conduct of putting the right first, what we are doing is demonstrating, again, so to speak, what fans we are, how admiring we are, kiviyochel, how obsessed we are. And anything that we know about Hashem that we can latch onto, we're going to do. Appreciate that. It's not just technical. The next time you're putting on your jacket and you're going to stick your hand into the right sleeve first, think about that. I know that Hashem considers right more important for some purposes, and that's why I want to do this too. I'm lining myself up with Hashem. I want to be associated with him in another way. It's an expression of, this is already not an expression of Yirat Shamayim, this is not an expression of our fear of Hashem, this is an expression of, so to speak, of our enthusiasm about Hashem, of how, what fans we are of Hashem, kiviyachol, so to speak. Sorry, just give me a moment.
Close the door. You want to stay in here? What you're calling? I'm going to close the door. You want to stay in here?
What you're calling?
I'm closing the door.
Yeah? Okay, I'm sorry. We move on. V'lo yishma ki imel dvarav. He only listens to Hashem's word. He only listens to Hashem's word. What does this mean? So, I'll give two examples of what this is talking about. We want to be in a situation that the only one I am beholden to is Hashem. He's the only one I feel a sense of obligation to, because I don't want anything else to compete with my ability to do whatever I need to do for Hashem. If I'm beholden to more than one party, then there might be a conflict of interests. Now, what does that mean? aren't you beholden to your parents? And the answer is once again, yes, because that is a value in this system of being beholden to Hashem. We don't want to have any sort of sense of obligation that is outside the framework of my relationship with Hashem such that it can compete. I'll give two examples. One is a bit more extreme and is not going to be relevant, but the other already brings it more home. We know that being a slave is looked down upon. What does that mean? What do I mean by looked down upon? What we mean is, if a person, Chalila, is in a situation where he's sold as a slave, there isn't much he can do about it. Okay. There's also a situation where a person, it's a consequence of things that he did. A person stole and can't pay. Well, a person stole and can't pay, Beis Din sells him into slavery. Sorry, just one moment. I apologize. Person stole, he sold into slavery. The halacha is that after 6 years, he goes free. What happens if the person says, I don't want to go free? I want to stay and remain a slave. I like it here. So we all know the halacha. The halacha is that a hole is pierced in his ear in the doorpost. And there's the famous Rashi that says, why do we do this? What's the idea here? The idea is that it's a certain punishment. Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, Hashem says, you are my slaves. And you're meant to understand from that, v'lo avadim la'avadim, you're not meant to be slaves to other people. A person who goes and willingly acquires for himself another master deserves a certain punishment. Now, the Torah still enables him to do it. Not everything that the Torah allows does the Torah approve of. That's one of the points you see here. Not everything that's allowed is necessarily approved of. The fact that the Torah does not prohibit something doesn't necessarily mean it's approved. That's what you see here. The Torah permits the person to decide he wants to remain a slave to this person, but disapproval is being expressed. And it's being expressed through that hole that's pierced in the person's ear. What's the idea? The idea is exactly the point that we're making here. Hashem says, you have a master that's going to compete with you being able to really dedicate your life to my will. And that's a problem. Li b'nei Yisrael avadim. You are my slaves, and you are not to be slaves to others. I'll give you another example of this. This is already a little more relevant. The Rambam talks about this. The Mishnah says, Al tisvad al rishus. Avoid working for the royal court. Avoid working for the royal court. Working for the royal court is a reality, and this also, we'll find that this is relevant. We don't have royal courts, but this is relevant to other areas in life. Working in the royal court was a reality of intrigue, of conspiracy. There was always competition. The natural situation in a royal court, the members of a royal court, that there was always competition over closeness to the king, over the king's ear, having his ear, having more influence with the king, having more favor with the king. There was always this competition, which could get ugly. But besides the fact that it could get ugly, the Rambam says this, when a person has to make a focus out of finding favor in the eyes of a human being that will compete with his ability to just completely focus on finding favor in the eyes of Hashem. We have a historic example of this. A historic example of this was the story of the tragic story of Doeg HaAdoimi. Doeg HaAdoimi, I'll elaborate on this because this is a worthwhile lesson. Doeg HaAdoimi was the head of the Sanhedrin in Shaul HaMelech's court, in the court of Shaul HaMelech. A very, very great Torah scholar. And he was apparently considered the foremost authority at the time, the foremost Torah authority in Shaul HaMelech's court. And then a new young star appeared on the scene. A new young star appeared on the scene by the name of David. David was a rising star. And his place in the Beis Medrash, you have to understand that in those days, in those great days, in the great court of the great Shaul HaMelech, the king's court meant the king's Beis Medrash. Right? Everybody who had a say there were people of heavy Torah authority. David HaMelech quickly earned for himself, when he was moved into Shaul HaMelech's court, before the tensions began between him and Shaul HaMelech, quickly earned for himself a very, very important place of standing here. Now, Doeg HaDoimi started feeling threatened by it. His status, his place in the court, as the authority in the court, as the final word, was now being threatened by David. And this caused him unease. Now, presumably, it would be below his dignity, it was below his standing, it was below who he really was to just come out and, you know, in good old other court style, just start, you know, really competing. But there began to be a certain resentment that started festering. And then, where did it actually reach ahead? Where did it really come to where it came to? We're cutting through different parts of the story now. You know what? Maybe call this a preview. I keep having in my mind the thought of resuming a nachshir that we used to do, but starting it up again on Zoom. I don't know. Don't hold me to that, even though this is being recorded. I keep on playing with the idea. It's very difficult to implement right now, but maybe we'll call this a little bit of a preview for that. But we're going to cut through some of this story. Lemaisa, Shaul HaMelech started having suspicions that David was trying to overthrow him. That David was trying to rebel against him, that David wanted to unseat him. It reached a point where David had to flee. David had to run away. And David ran. When he began his escape, he actually was known as one of the most important people in Shaul HaMelech's court and one of Shaul HaMelech's closest agents, most trusted agents. That's how he was known. People, the public weren't necessarily aware of the real tensions, the real very dangerous tensions that were beginning to develop between David, between Shaul and David. But David ran away, and the first stop that he made was in a city called Noiv. Noiv, the city, was a city of Kayhanim. And the main Kayan there was a Kayan by the name of Achimelech. I'm not sure if he was actually the Kayan Gadol at the time. I don't remember the details right now. But he was the head Kayan in this city of Kayhanim called Noiv. Achimelech, his name was. David came to Noiv fleeing. Just nobody knew that he was fleeing. And without getting into the details of why he did it this way, he came and he told Achimelech that he's on a secret mission. And he asked Achimelech, he was heading for the life of a fugitive. He needed very basic equipment. He needed food. He asked Achimelech to give him a sword and to give him food. And that's basically what happened. He told him he was on a secret mission. He did not tell him that now he had fallen out of favor with Shaul and was running away. He told him he was on a secret mission. He needs food. He needs a sword. And Achimelech happily provided him with that. Okay. Doeg HaDoimi happened to be there at the time. And he saw this exchange. Fine. Put that on the side for a moment. Meanwhile, Shaul is growing more and more paranoid. And at one point he says to the people around him, how does it work if a person really becomes paranoid? Now I have to understand, Shaul at this point was to a large extent acting as an oinus, meaning Hashem had put a certain spirit of a ruach ra, Chazal call, a certain evil spirit unto him. He had lost the ruach hakodesh that he had been endowed with. He was in a very bad state, which very much affected him emotionally at the time. To a large extent, he wasn't, almost couldn't be held accountable for the things he did then. But Lamaisa, he was sure that David was out to get him. Now, how does it work if a person is paranoid? If you're paranoid and you know there are three families on your floor, you know that the neighbor across the hall is out to get you. He wants to kill you. You know that. Now, why doesn't the other neighbor tell you about it? You know that your next door neighbor wants to kill you. Why doesn't the third neighbor on the floor let you know? To a truly paranoid person, the answer is obvious. The third neighbor is in on the plot. Why isn't the third neighbor telling you anything? The truth is because there isn't anything to tell. That's why he's not telling you anything. But to the paranoid mind, the reason the third neighbor isn't telling me about the second guy's plans to kill me is because he's in on the plot too. And who knows who else in the building is in on the plot also. This is basically what Shaul HaMelech expresses to his servants. Shaul HaMelech says, David HaMelech is out to get me. That's a fact. There's no disputing that. None of his other main officers, and he blames, he accuses his close circle of, why, how could it be that nobody's providing me with any information of what's going on? Are you all against me? And nobody had anything to tell him because there wasn't anything going on. Nobody knew about anything going on because there wasn't anything going on. But Shaul HaMelech said, where are those who are loyal to me? Where are those who are loyal to me? And here is where Doeg HaDoimi fell. Because here was an opportunity for Doeg HaDoimi to really prove himself as the one loyal person to Shaul in the court, the most loyal person to Shaul in the court. And finally, also at the same time, you know, do it at the expense of the man who's become his rival, David HaMelech. And here is where Doeg HaDoimi fell. And he went and he informed Shaul, you're right, I know about the conspiracy. And he told him about the plotting, the conspiring that he saw between David HaMelech and who? Achimelech. He said, yes, the Kohanim of Noiv are in cohorts with David. And he told him about this meeting that David had with Achimelech. You look in the Mefarshim there. He told the story close to accurately, but with a few details different, which kind of indicated that, yes, Achimelech is talking in on the plot, and that's where David's allies are. This whole revolt that David is planning against you, he's doing it with the Kohanim of Noiv. What happened then? So this was already Doeg HaDoimi starting to slip. As a result of what? As a result of loyalty to another master besides Hashem. As a result of the need to feel close to find favor with, to be held closely by his other master, by Shaul HaMelech. And where did it go from there? Then it spiraled to very tragic places. Shaul HaMelech grew furious, and now it all made sense in his mind. So yes, this is that whole conspiracy that he was worried about is going on there. It's going on in Noiv. You know, Achimelech and the Kohanim of Noiv are teaming up with David HaMelech against him. So what happened first was he ordered Avner, Ben Ner, who was his general, to wipe out the city of Noiv as rebels. Rebels. The whole thing was a fantasy. And Avner refused because he understood this. And here, David turned to Doeg and Shaul turned to Doeg and said, you're the one who actually discovered this. You go do the deed. You go do the deed. You take a force, a unit, whatever it is, and wipe out the city of Noiv. Now here already, Doeg HaDoimi had already slipped in the fact that he maligned Achimelech in order to, you know, to be able to be the one, the loyal one, who's coming back to Shaul with the goods. And here Hashem basically brought him to a point of, you made a big mistake, Doeg, by doing that. And now you climbed up You know, you climbed up on a high tree. Are you either going to go all the way to Gehenim, or are you going to make a very humiliating and mortifying about face and tell Shaul, no, I can't do this because perhaps the way I put it to you was not accurate? And Doeg failed the test. He went ahead and he actually led the force who wiped out the entire city of Kaihanim, Noiv, the city of Kaihanim. And as a result of this story, Doeg HaAdoimi, the great Torah sage, lost his share to Olam Haba. He was lost for all of eternity. And this is the example. This is the example that the Rishonim point to, the Rambam points to, as what happens when a person feels an intense loyalty or feels a servitude to someone other than Hashem. And therefore, the Rambam explains Chazal as advising, keep away from situations like this where you're part of a court and there's the one on the top that you need to be kissing up to, that you need to be bootlicking, that you need to be currying favor with, because that will compete, needing to please, needing to have such loyalty to a human being when it's not directly in the context of what Hashem expects of you, is going to lead a person to the wrong places. It's going to lead to conflicts with what Hashem wants of him. So we come back. Perhaps this is what the Chayyus Al Vavis is saying in these brief words. You should not be obedient to anyone other than Hashem, unless it's in the context of Hashem's servants. Hashem wants you. Wants you being obedient to this person, you're obedient to this person. But otherwise not. When you are obedient to the person, you're doing it in the context of your relationship with Hashem, and therefore, once again, only according to Hashem's guidelines. And again, when you are truly loyal, more, as we've said, obsessed, if you will, so to speak, with Hashem, you only want to eat what He gave you. What does this mean? What does this mean? So, simply understood, this really is the point of Sameach Bechelkai. Sameach Bechelkai, a person is happy with his lot. But he's giving us a deeper insight in the concepts of being happy with your lot. Being happy with your lot means the understanding that Hashem provides for me, and I don't, if Hashem decided you should get X and not Y, I don't want Y. I don't want anything more than what Hashem gave me. It certainly does not mean that you wake up in the morning and you say, I'm waiting for Hashem to feed me. I'm not going to go out to work. I also won't go to the grocery because I'm waiting for Hashem to feed me. Hashem will feed me. I'll have that. But I'm not going to go try to make my own efforts to feed myself. That is certainly not the intent. Hashem's the one who provided you with the abilities to get the food. Just like the Chavis Avavah says elsewhere, if a person thinks along these lines, then also when there's breakfast sitting in front of you on the table, don't take a fork and lift the food to your mouth. Say, if Hashem wants the food to get into my mouth, the food will get into my mouth. But don't take it into your mouth. We don't say that. We say that, you know how Hashem is feeding you? Hashem is feeding you by giving you a fork and giving you the ability to lift that fork. And by giving you other abilities and giving you abilities to earn food through those abilities. Those are all the way Hashem is feeding you. So what do we mean when we say don't eat anything other than what Hashem feeds you? What that means is I don't want anything other than what Hashem is feeding me. If this is what Hashem designated for me, then again, sameach bechelkai, being happy with my lot, as in the understanding that Hashem has a very personal plan for me in terms of what He knows is good for me, and I don't want to take anything more than that. I'm happy with that. And I want to say this in the positive sense also. Sameach Bechelkai, Lo'yechal Amashi Trifai, means that what you have, you should view as something sacred, something, a gift from Hashem to you. You know, the halacha is that you have to treat bread with respect. Right? Everyone's familiar with this in a general way. You're not supposed to throw bread. That's halacha. You're not supposed to throw bread. You're not supposed to throw bread in the garbage. You're not supposed to discard of bread like any other garbage. You shouldn't just, you have a large piece of bread left over after a meal. No one's going to eat it. A slice of bread. Don't throw it straight into the garbage. You wrap it up. You wrap it up and then you throw it out. Other such halachas, all along the same lines, you treat bread with respect. And that extends into other halachas of what we call bizui oichlin. You're not allowed to disgrace food. It's important to realize, you know, sometimes there are, again, this is not a halachas here. I'm just throwing things out for our purposes. And then if you have shaylas to ask, ask your shaylas. But you know that sometimes, you know, people will use, let's say, lentils or beans that you'll glue them to a paper and then spray paint them in order to make some craft or something. You have to know that these are shaylas. You have to know if you're allowed to do it. I'm not saying whether you are allowed or not allowed, but these are shaylas that are discussed by the place. If you're actually allowed to do it or not, it might be prohibited as what we call bizui oichlin, disgracing food. What's the idea here? The idea here is what we're discussing. Food is Hashem's gift to you. The bread that you buy that comes in the angel bag is to be viewed as something sacred because it's something that Hashem care packaged for you. This is Hashem's means of sustaining you, Hashem's means of keeping you alive. And therefore, you're supposed to relate to it as something sacred. The truth is, Chazal say this about the tzaddikim, that the tzaddikim relate to all of their possessions as something sacred. Remember the story of Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu was on the move with his entire family, and he crossed a creek with his whole family, and then he remembered that he left. You know, if we're talking, let's talk in contemporary terms. Let's talk in contemporary terms. He left a package of disposable plates on the other side of the creek. He just moved with his whole family. He's busy moving and he's on the run also. He's on the run. But he left a package of disposable plates on the other side of the creek. Pachim ktanim. Some cans, some jugs. Okay, Shine, just move on, whatever. It costs 10 shekel. No, Yaakov Avinu had to go back and get it. Yaakov Avinu had to go back and get it. And that is where he had his historic encounter with Esau's angel, etc. We're not going to get into the whole story there. What's the idea there? The idea then, Chazal say that, yes, anything that Hashem brought into my possession is a gift from Hashem to me. It's been given to me for a purpose. It's a tool. It's one of my means of serving Hashem. If Hashem put it into my possession, then that it's there for that. And therefore, I relate to it as something sacred. I want to eat only what Hashem gave me, meaning what Hashem provides me with is something that I view as a sacred gift from Him to me, something that He wants me to use in His service. Anything that I do to take care of myself is being done to sustain, to support, to maintain something that's very, very valuable to Him. And therefore, I cherish that. And I'm sameach bechelki. So this is exactly Hashem's personal package for me. I don't need more than that. I'm not looking for more than that. V'layach shoiv ela bidulasoi. And you think of nothing other than Hashem's greatness. What this means is that any admiration for anything else is going to be with a certain limit. I don't have all-out admiration for anything other than Hashem. Whatever else I come across is always in the great background of Hashem, and therefore it pales to an extent in comparison. It also means that what I do admire are going to be things that are lined up with Hashem. I'm going to admire those who are closer to Hashem than I am, who exemplify for me what Hashem wants. But again, the greatness in my life, I don't have other great things in my life other than Hashem. The most exciting thing for me in life is the knowledge that right now I'm pleasing Hashem. And what I'm most enthusiastic about in life is the opportunity to serve Hashem. It's not a duty. Well, it is a duty. But I also appreciate the privilege, like we discussed last week, of the fact that Hashem wants a relationship with me. Hashem is interested in my service. And therefore, I'm going to show him, kiviyachol, what I can do for him. Okay, I'm skipping a little bit because there's a lot of phrases here along these lines. L'yeshev kim beveisai. A person spends his time. A person resides only in Hashem's house. What does this mean? Okay, this means a number of things. This means a number of things. And okay, we're going to be ending with this now, but we'll use this as a preface for next week. Le'yeshev kim beveisai means, it comes back to the idea that, let's say you have the person who's very proud of his place in the king's court. He wants to be in the king's court as much as he can. He wants to spend as much time as he can there. He's proud of the fact that he has a place there. He's proud of the fact that he is, you know, when you go through the list of those in the king's court, he's on that list. And that's where he wants to be. So we want to be, sometimes we have to go take care of other things, but we want to be spending our time in Hashem's court. Where is Hashem's court? So of course, the first thing you'll think is, it's in shul, for the man it's in the Beis Medrash. Certainly true. But first and foremost, for men and for women, is the fact that we want our homes to be Hashem's court. We want our homes to be Beisai. We want to turn our homes into a reality that when I enter my home, I am now operating in Hashem's court. And the truth is that that's what every Jewish home really can and should be. But we're going to call this an introduction to next week, Bezos Hashem, and we'll stop here for now. Agutavach.
Thank you. Thank you.